This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Force Center, a show about Star Wars, pop culture, and the ultimate adventure, life itself. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok.
And this is one of our episode cues of the everything. Everything today is the Jedi Council and Disneyland. I really like that we call our show Questions of the Everything, because when we were doing Other Center, we enjoyed having some other topics. And sometimes people have questions about, car insurance or Indiana Jones. But now we do a show where we do two questions and call it everything. And it's fun every week to imagine, what if this was all there was to life? Jedi Council in Disneyland. Would that be a good world? I don't know. What do you think, Ken?
Look, first of all, I want to know about car insurance. Why wasn't I covered? Why was I at fault when she turned into me from the right lane? That was the question of 2023 in the summer.
But understand the big question, the hit song of 2023 in your world. Yeah. Why wasn't I covered when she turned into me?
You know, I just need Beyonce to write a song about that. Yeah, I need Beyonce to write a song about that.
Excellent. We will get into everything the Jedi Council in Disneyland. But today we want to let you know that our podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are continuing to recommend Dark Disciple by Christy Golden because it's a great Star Wars book, and it is on the whole Star Wars community's mind as Asajj Ventress makes her triumphant return. You can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4center. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audio book. We also have an ask.
We do have an ask. We would like you to consider. I think that's an ask, right? We'd like you to consider going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/4center and supporting us over there. We have a goal going on right now that we're trying to make sure that we are over at 400 paid patrons. We'll do a commentary of a Star Wars film, and we'll put that out to our patrons to help us decide which movie we should cover first. Will the series continue? You can help us by supporting over there. If you're there, you get exclusive access to our 007 Center episodes. We are working on the second one, Quantum of Solace, that is coming out. But right now, you can go back and check the Casino Royale episode. 2.5 hours of a wonderful discussion of the first Daniel Craig Bond film as that series takes a look at those 5 Daniel Craig Bond films. Also, if you're a fan of Bad Batch and want to chat Bad Batch with a great group of Star Wars friends and fans, you can get into our Discord from our Patreon page. So it's all there, patreon.com/4center.
Yeah, and we should say thank you to the new patrons have joined. We're doing this beautiful dance around 400 where we get to 400, we get to 401, and then somebody else needs to leave for different reasons. So we've hit the goal right now. Today, as we're recording, is April 1st, the first of the month. There's often a little bit of people needing to reassess finances at the first of the month. So hopefully we will stay up above 400 and we will we'll have a little Ewok celebration, parade, fireworks, and we will get voting on what that film is that we're going to do the commentary on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Get those Ewoks dancing.
Get them Ewoks dancing for when we reach 8,000 subscribers. We'll dress up as Ewoks and dance ourselves at 8,000. Just throwing that out.
I'm game.
400 is the goal now, so I'm really trying to buy us some time before we need to put on the Ewok costume.
Yeah, find the Ewok.
Anyway, Ken, we like to talk life and Star Wars adventures. Did you have any life or Star Wars? You must have had some life adventures. You have life and or Star Wars adventures.
Yeah, just busy working as we all are, trying to get to my financial decisions at the beginning and ends of months. But along the way, I've been trying to get back, not even just back into shape. Like I had a big back injury in January that knocked me off of my workout routine and everything. And of course, when you do that, you're like, well, might as well go to 7-Eleven for 4 slices of pizza. So I'm trying to recover a little bit from that. And so I've been on the treadmill more. And I was like, I'm going to watch something Star Wars. And which seems like normal, but it's been a bit for that too. And I was like, Solo, episode of Andor. I've been kind of wanting to rewatch that series a little bit. I love Kenobi. No, I went to Empire of Dreams again, which I love. It's such a relaxing doc. And I think it's one of my favorites and it's so good. But yeah, you look at it now, you're like, I could see this is definitely through the lens of Lucasfilm or even George himself. And it was at a different time period. Right. And not that there's lies or anything. Just like, no, it's a sleek, a certain perspective. But I enjoy it so much. It's just so relaxing, almost as relaxing as Alan Ladd Jr.'s voice. He's a walking ASMR show like great Alan Ladd. And I watched it in 2 parts on the treadmill over the weekend. And it was just a nice comfort, nice Star Wars comfort.
Yeah, I got to watch that again soon. It's so lodged in my brain. I must have watched it a lot when that DVD first came out. But there's specific moments, like a lot of Harrison Ford's interviews, I remember. Like when he's asked, like, what was your reaction to the success of Star Wars? Like, great, now we can get to work. He does a little hand thing.
Yeah, he's got the mid-2000s, like short, almost buzzed, but combed forward hair. It's so of the era. It's so awesome.
Yeah, it's so hard when you're looking at, a documentary that was now made almost 20 years ago, about something that was happening 30 years prior, basically. And you're like, 2 levels of time travel in one document. Something else. Yeah. I've been keeping busy working on film stuff. I was out of town for my wife's birthday. It was a lovely trip. Mm-hmm. March is always a busy time because my wife's birthday is March 25th. And March 31st is the anniversary of our first date. Anybody who follows me on social media, I post about it every year. But we went to a bunch of friends were in a show called Triumph of Love. We went to a show called Triumph of Love, being unsure if we were on a date. One of our friends asked very rudely at the bar afterwards, like, so this is a date, right? You guys are like hooking up. And we hadn't talked about it yet. And we were both like, ha, 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 ha. And then Sarah drove. She dropped me off at my apartment. And I was like, so is this a date? And she's like, I don't know. What do you think? And I said, I would like it to have been a date. And she was like, me too. And so it began. So we call it Triumph, and we celebrate every year. I got her too many different presents, so then I had some left over for our anniversary. We don't normally give presents for a Triumph. But I was like, hey, I got here's a couple of presents. And she's like, I just bought these. I didn't know when I'd give them to you. And she gave me multiple Kenobi sweatpants.
Yes.
From the merchandising push. One of them just says Kenobi. It's real cool. The other has a like half picture of deadly serious Obi-Wan Kenobi just staring up at me from my thigh. So that's been a great Star Wars adventure, having Kenobi stare at me from my own thigh.
So wait, is the head, if you're standing and I'm looking at you, is the head upside down? Or it's so that when you sit, he's looking at you? Or is it the right
way?
It's
right side up if you're looking at my thigh. So he's upside down. Just
it's as if Ewan is just laying on gently on your lap right now. Looking
at yes, it's like yes. I could lay back and just stroke Obi-Wan's beautiful half mullet.
It's gonna be okay.
It'll be okay. I wish there was a season two as well. I wish there was a season two as well. I love that. Anyway, that's my Star Wars adventure. Kenobi sweatpants. I'm gonna be just all Kenobi all the time here.
Beautiful.
All right. Well, we would love to know more about Jennifer's life adventures, but she's too busy having them. She'll be joining us soon. We should also announce that this week we're going to have two episodes of Subjective Wars. Our Bad Batch coverage is going to be a little late this weekend, little later this week. Ken's got a comedy gig, and we try to keep things flexible. So we'll be a little bit late on Bad Batch, but we will be discussing it.
Apologies. I've got snow in Boston to deal with. But, yeah, thank you all for allowing the grace, and you and Jennifer as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to those episodes coming out soon. So let's dive into our questions. The first one is about the Jedi Council. These questions come to us from our patrons on Patreon, and we encourage people to let us know why they're asking the question. That sometimes means basically kind of short form essays about the question that gives it more context, which we welcome. So this is a longer one. You ready, Ken?
I am.
Here we go. This comes to us from Victor Lopez de los Mozos Gomez, who says, Happy New Year. Let me start thanking, which I keep in there to show people. It takes us a while to get to all the questions because we've got a lot of good ones. Happy New Year, indeed. Happy New Year. Let me start by thanking you for making the best podcast. It helps me a lot listening to you. So I studied law, and something that always fascinated me from the prequels is how George Lucas reflected about the separation of powers from a very European perspective. We have the legislative, the Senate, the executive, the chancellor, and the judicial power, the Jedi Order. The Senate helps slowly the chancellor to destroy the Jedi Order by giving him more and more power until he's proclaimed emperor. But I think the Jedi Order also helped him, as I'll try to explain. For me, the prequels are all about what happens when these three powers are mixed between them. The end of the democracy. I said before, from a very European perspective, because of the way George Lucas devised the Jedi Order. The Jedi were not elected by the citizens from the Republic, like in the Anglo-Saxon judicial system, but they had to pass a hard training and some even harder trials or exams, just like in the European countries. In Spain, if you want to be a judge, you have to pass three hard exams, for example. Even more, when George Lucas created the Jedi Council, he was imitating the judicial structure that some European countries have, where you have the judicial power composed by all the judges of a country, the Jedi, and a high entity that rules the judges from a gubernatorial perspective, the Consejo General del Poder Judicial, here in Spain, for example, and the Jedi Council in Star Wars. For me, the Jedi were the closer thing we can see in Star Wars to a judge. They resolved conflicts in the fairest way possible. What is fair is always subjective to an up-to-ver discussion, but modern societies agreed that what a judge says is fair. I use the past tense here because, like what happened to the Jedi Order, nowadays the judges are being questioned by media and political parties and by extension by society, sometimes for fair reasons, several times for political reasons that have nothing to do with what is fair or not. I will never say that the Jedi Order deserved the destiny it had, because that would mean that a fascist like the Emperor was right. But I will criticize one single thing: the Jedi's participation in the Clone Wars. They were peacekeepers of the galaxy. That means they should serve equally the citizens of the Republic in the citizens of the Separatist planets, and they failed in that. I think in this matter, there can't be Force excuses or the manipulation of an evil Sith, because this had nothing to do with the Force, but with the conception of democracy. They decided to act like an active part in a political conflict, and that broke the separation of powers and the trust that people had in them. Do you agree with me? What are your thoughts? Thanks for existing, and sorry for my English. Victor, your English is fabulous, and as you can tell at my stumbling attempts at correct pronunciation of different languages, your English is great. Also, the sentence, thanks for existing and sorry for my English, that's an amazing sentence. That needs to be the title of an indie film.
Victor's very active in our Discord, and he has written some beautiful things like this in there, and also apologizes for his English, and outside of it just being, there's no need for apologizing. I do like when some things are not lost in translation, but there's this little gray area. The sentence that he wrote, are you agree with me? I actually would like to adopt as something we say in America. I think there's more strength behind, are you agree, like capital A, with me? That's, I would love to use that more than, hey, do you think I'm right? Like, I think that's great. Victor, you're wonderful as always.
Yeah, no, I think English is due for some changes. I took Spanish in junior high and high school, and then it got completely derailed in high school by just a wild, out of control teacher who was not good at teaching. And then we discovered that if we made her laugh, she'd just give us good grades. And it's one of my great regrets. Like, I didn't learn Spanish because I just took the easy way out of, like, make her laugh and get a B minus and float on by. So I'm doing Duolingo right now and having a lot of fun learning what I didn't learn in high school and learning about some of these different constructions of sentences. And are you agree with me is pretty damn great.
I love that. It's great.
Yeah. So let's get into this. We've got the big active question about the Jedi making a mistake of getting involved in the Clone Wars. But there's also some really interesting, philosophical and structural thoughts about are the Jedi setting out to serve the Force or democracy, or is there any difference between the two, or is it their responsibility, as I think Victor is saying, to kind of support both? There's the will of the Force, but then there is also just looking around in the practical reality, the fundamental idea of democracy, that everyone is equal and everyone would deserve their protection.
Yeah, I like that. I wanted to start there. I really like how he phrased it, of like, if they were doing, I don't want to say their job, I don't want to put those words in his mouth, but the idea of that, hey, you know, they're there to protect both those of the Republic and Separatists, because they're there to protect beings, right? Against humans in this galaxy. Beings, and that's in line with the Force.
Souls. Yeah.
Souls. That's a good way to look at it. I like starting the conversation there, because I think there's a lot of wonderful things in here, obviously, and whether or not George intentionally meant to go, let me analyze the three branches of the government and how there needs to be systems of balances and checks set up, and the integrity needs to be kept. I think it's just natural that it would be there based on what George was talking about. But to this detail, I don't know. But that's a great spot for me, of just like, you want to sit down the Jedi and go, what do you feel your mission was at the start of this, and how did it get to here?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I'm not an expert on European government structures. So on that part of it, like, I'm enjoying listening and learning. I think for me, the way I approach it big picture is with my own political beliefs, and you know, we're in the middle of a huge political season that is only going to get more intense here in America. And I think, to me, what's fascinating about about politics and everything Victor's talking about, what is and is not fair, and do judges actually uphold that, and what parts of society should challenge judges, and why are they challenging judges, right, and all that, and this idea of what is fair. To me, it's just this fundamental contrast truth of humanity, where we seem to want to think that we are very logical beings, but we generally proceed emotionally. Mm-hmm. And for me, politics is utterly pragmatic. We have a system. people have different systems. Right now in America, we have a system of there are going to be two major candidates, and you are going to choose one. And we get caught up. And that, to me, is just very pragmatic. Also, the other pragmatic element is just like certain laws are going to be passed or not. And those laws represent things I believe in or things I do not believe in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so for me, politics is all about beliefs. It's about what do you want the society to be like? Who gets money for help? Who doesn't? What's illegal? What isn't? And why do you want those things to be? It's, you know, beliefs represented through a pragmatic filter. But because we're so very emotional, all sorts of things get tied up into it of what team are you on? Do I like this person or not? You know, I have relatives say I won't vote for that person because their voice is scary. Like, well, is that going to make a difference on what laws get passed? Ultimately, maybe. Yeah. But I think for me, what it means, what would all those values and ideas mean when it comes to Star Wars is I think the Jedi are attempting to represent the in some ways, the very pragmatic of what is happening to the people, mm-hmm. not getting tied up in what people often mean by politics of the, you know, the deal making and the rule bending and the grabbing for power and the, it's more important that this team wins and this team loses. And we want to suck up to this person because they have clout right now versus just what laws are being passed and how are they truly going to affect people? And I think for me, a part of the story of the prequels is the Jedi should just be like, what is going to really affect the people and how can we help? Mm-hmm. And like, particularly in like Clone Wars episodes where the Jedi are allowing the Senate to get involved in Jedi business.
Yeah,
they're getting tied up in the all of the machinations of politics, which are sort of the surface level mechanisms by which those things that truly matter get decided.
Yeah, yeah. And even just trying to trace it, I guess, in the quest to justice for the Jedi. And Victor, I think, would agree with that, as he said. I will never say that the Jedi would have deserved the destiny it had. You know, like, who's pushing the dark over the light at the beginning of all of this? Even going to Phantom Menace, right? Trade Federation, which is corporations that have representation in the government, which until you pointed that out in 2014, I hadn't realized just the audacity of what that was. I remember when the early moments you and I ever worked together, I was just like, God bless it. I've never seen it in that way. Why didn't I look at what was actually there in the text? Why is that weird? The senator from Amazon does not seem like a good thing.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? They push it over first. And then the separatists definitely seem to be pushing it over if you're not looking at the actual issue. So I understand where the Jedi start, but it's like, I think there was also some of this with Victor. There's a little bit of a bad PR team going on for the Jedi where like there's this distrust in them. The distrust is being sowed by a lot of, factors in a lot of people in the galaxy at this time, none more higher than Palpatine, but like, the trust is being eroded, and they're losing their way, but everyone else is also thinking they're losing the way, and it's just this big snowball that's rolling down the hill on my Gito towards Ki-Adi Mundi. And that's a lot of what I see in here, this too, because I agree with you. There's a lot of emotions. I think a lot of my big changes in my own life, politically and socially, have just boiled down to emotions. The policies and the procedures and all that stuff kind of come after. But it's like, what do I feel is right? And I think the Jedi at the beginning of this have a lot of good ideas what they feel is right in this war at the beginning. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think they rationalize it. And I think they have, I'll go through my Justice for the Jedi list of like, I think it is a mistake, but I understand why they made the mistake. Doesn't absolve them of the mistake.
Right.
But I, when we did our Clone Wars, report rewatch, and I kind of I really wanted to keep an eagle eye out for the politics. And sometimes it's blatant, like in some of the Padme episodes. But other times, like, you get caught up in the emotion between Ahsoka and Anakin in Ahsoka's whole trial. But, like, one of the things that resonated with me the most of, like, the Senate dictating what happens to a Jedi and Mace going along with it. Because, like, if we go against the Senate, it's going to be really bad for basically our PR. And, like, that to me is, like, it's getting toward the end of the Clone Wars, and it's really, like, take a step back, and you know this is wrong. You know you are doing wrong to one of your own. You are rushing to judgment on Ahsoka. You know it's wrong, but you're so caught up in the game of politics, in the fear of what will people think, what will people be like. And I think that is, I think the Jedi aligning themselves to lockstep with the Senate is a part of what Lucas was talking about, which I think goes to what Victor is saying about separation of powers. They're separated for a reason, so they can be a check and a balance on one another.
Yeah, absolutely. To protect us against all of our worst instincts, which is, you know, we're not all we're not all good. We're not all good. And the quest for power will grab all of you. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Well, let's get into the actual getting into the Clone Wars. We've talked about it before, but are you in the mindset of agreeing with Victor that the Jedi were mistaken to get involved in the Clone Wars?
Yes, in the big picture. And again, that's why I like going to the beginning of it. But I understand, right? I understand. But the moment, that's why the modern Star Wars conversation, I say modern, I believe it started in the Clone Wars, but like that this was questioned, right? Because we grew up with General Kenobi, and that seemed, that was quite a heroic title. I'm not saying that snarky towards generals or military, of a lot of people, including family of mine in the military. But you know what I mean? It was like, well, he was a general in the Clone Wars, and wow. And then come look at it and be like, well, that title was a misstep. Taking those titles was a misstep. And I loved it and analyzing it from that angle. So were they wrong? No, I don't think at the beginning they were wrong. I think they were wrong for not stepping back and taking stock of every step they took farther down the path. By Pongrel, you got to be figuring out this, something is wrong. But Snowball, I don't know if you can stop. I don't know if you can stop. And I don't know if at that point, you know, they did such a good job, they being like the Republic, a.k.a. Palpatine, to make the Separatists into the bad guys. That's why I love some of the Bad Batch stuff of just like, let's analyze. That heroes on both sides thing has meaning now at post-Clone Wars and Bad Batch. That I think they took the right steps to start is why I go. Does that make sense? Or if that's, I'm trying to be as fair as I can to the Jedi.
Yeah. I think that is the lesson of the Clone Wars. Yoda pulls the trigger and then says, this is awful. It's a tragedy, but continues. I think it is a mistake. The war does not need to happen. The hero of the prequel era, Padme, is the whole plot of Attack of the Clones is trying to stop the military creation act, passing so that there can be discussions that people can actually talk through the problem. I feel like the Jedi should have, at the beginning of that film, Mace Windu says, we can't fight a war for you. You know, we're peacekeepers, not soldiers. And I feel like they should have stuck to their beliefs. They could have focused on aid missions, defenses of vulnerable populations. If a war comes to a planet and we're just here at this village to say, don't fight here. You know, you do what you need to do. I think that it's the tragedy that, you know, let them go, okay, we're doing this for defense. We'll end this quickly. And there's not a heavy thumb on it, but it's in the Clone Wars animated series where they start making rash decisions because they want to end it quickly. In early seasons, like there's discussions with, you know, Kenobi and Luminara and Dulia, but we can end this quickly. By the time you get to the Pongrel episode, the Republic, the Jedi are invading a sovereign planet, and the people they're fighting are like, We're not even separatists. We just don't want you on our planet. But the Jedi are like, but we need it strategically. You know, and again, it's like Lucas always finds his balance between wanting to be like this sort of like, I want to be a statesman talking about politics and I want to laser fights and jokes and balancing all those things. It's absolutely there in the Clone Wars. The Jedi are criticized constantly throughout the Clone Wars animated series, starting in season one by the Lerman in the Jedi Crash episodes. You know, Duchess Satine gives it to him, and Duchess Satine is involved in the Council of Neutral Systems, a big alliance of people going, we shouldn't be fighting this. The Jedi breaking under the stress, like Pong Krell and Beerus Offee, are a criticism of getting involved. So I think for me, my interpretation, the entire intent of the story of the Clone Wars is that the Jedi have understandably been suckered into a choice they should not have made. And instead of getting out of it, they double down and they double down trying to end it. They're always trying to end it, you know, and there's some amount of like, is this a moment where they should have said, we can't control that the government wants to fight the separatists. Mm-hmm. We can't control that. But we can control our choice. And so we will spend this war doing humanitarian aid and nothing else. And how much would that have stymied Order 66? How much would that have stymied Sheev's ultimate plans?
No, I love where you're going with this, where, you know, this, if the Jedi are the judges in this triangle of power here, that, you know, they're not accepting bribes and taking yacht trips. Their wives aren't on Palpatine's insurrection team. You know, they're not failing to recuse themselves from cases like they should. There's justification for what they're doing. But the Pong Krell stuff is. We mentioned a lot here because I think it's so important from so many different angles. And the one you brought up from the beginning of our Clone Wars reports is like, oh, by the way, the Jedi are pushing over the Jedi and the Republic are pushing over perhaps light over dark in a way. If you want to look at it, it's a absolute change from the early seasons. So I love all that. I love analyzing it, but it's like, It goes to the concept of, I think we're far out of the politics side of it, but it goes to the concept of what starts as justice can turn to injustice really fast. And if you dig in your heels, the crises that can emerge from that, we're seeing it in the real world, I feel. And the Jedi, just that snowball was rolling. That's my image of the day. A snowball with Qui-Gon and Ki-Adi all flying out of it, trying to stop it.
There's a great Jarl Poof quote in the first High Republic public book, Light of the Jedi. And I didn't have time to look it up, so I'm paraphrasing, but they're discussing what to do about the Nile. And Jarl Poof basically says, you know, we are guardians of peace and justice, and peace and justice are sometimes in conflict. And those are the hardest decisions of when to use your power to say, this can't happen. So I'm going to use my power. Well, then that in pursuit of justice, then sometimes that means conflict. And then that's a disruption of the peace that Jedi want. Yeah. And that's a constant balance for them. And I think what was so expertly done about the Clone Wars is Palpatine's understanding of the Jedi philosophy and the way that they will twist themselves into knots attempting to do the right thing.
Yeah,
I can totally understand sitting on the Jedi Council and thinking we believe in defense, and this is defense. The opening crawl of Attack of the Clones makes it clear that separatists, you know, probably the Sith, you know, Dooku with Asajj, are performing random attacks on Republic planets and cities. That's where it's starting from. And Jedi are already stretched thin trying to address these attacks. Then they discover there is a Sith in Count Dooku behind it. Early parts, and that's like, hey, that's on our business card of a responsibility of ours is a Sith misusing the Force to abuse and hurt people. So now it's not just a war to them; it's their sworn obligation to stop the Sith. So like, okay, there's attacks on innocent people, so we're defending them. Stopping a Sith is by definition defense. And then in the early parts of the war, as the Clone Wars animated series shows us, it's not like, you know, we're not seeing, you know, separatists and Republic individuals or societies fighting. We are seeing massive armies of droids led by monsters like Grievous attacking hospitals. We're seeing, you know, Locke Dird testing out actual weapons of mass destruction on entirely innocent, uninvolved planets. So you can see once the Jedi are like, okay, maybe we shouldn't have gotten to this conflict. We're stopping Grievous from attacking a hospital. We're stopping the greedy Trade Federation, a corporation with way too much power, from testing out a weapon of an actual weapon of mass destruction. I know it's a loaded term, but it's true. On an innocent village. How does that feel like we're in the wrong place? You know, I can see early in the war where they feel like, well, that was clear. That was clear that we should be involved stopping that. But now we're mired in the war. We need a strategic position. And we're just borrowing somebody else's planet against their will for a little while. You know, I think it was masterfully constructed to take advantage of the Jedi really trying to do the right thing.
The walls are coming in, you know, inch by inch, right? It's a boiling frog. The Jedi are, you know, it's a boiling Meeber Gascon. And they're not picking up on it right away. Because I love those examples that you just gave. Like, yeah, absolutely. Not only is, the business card aspect of needing to stop a Sith, it's their speciality, after all. And the Lotaw, the Lotaw, like all of that stuff, like, that's why you're there. But then I'm wondering, not only how do they slip from that, but how you know, Palpatine then, by the time of Order 66, you had mentioned Order 66, it was easily, like, their destruction was so easily celebrated, right? And and like, that's not on the Jedi all the way, but I'm just, I'd love to have a list that's not in front of me right now of just all the little things they did, quote unquote, wrong to get people in the galaxy to be like, yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, I've been thinking it. We've been talking about it. We don't trust them. You know, we don't, the Republic media has been spinning lies about the Jedi. I don't trust them. I don't trust the truth. I don't trust their intentions. Palpatine did it so easily. That's what's frightening about it by the time Order 66 comes along.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think a lot of it to me is about the lockstep with the Senate. I was thinking a lot, and I wanted to ask you about the Attack of the Clones scene where, again, the plot of Attack of the Clones is the Military Creation Act is coming up, and Padme is determined to stop it because she wants to get to the actual heart of it. She wants to sit down with the separatists and go, what do you really want? Would it be the end of the world if you did break away and do your own thing? Can we make a trade agreement and you can have your own chancellor? Fine. Or can we address the things in the Republic that aren't working for you? Like, she wants to have an actual conversation about the actual issues.
Yeah.
And Palpatine can't have that. So the machinations of Attack of the Clones happen. But there's that scene. Mace starts out with, we can't fight a war for you. He's real clear on it.
Real clear.
They get Padme out of the way. They manipulate Jar Jar into proposing the emergency powers so Palpatine can just go, yep, Military Creation Act. Boom. And you have Mace and Yoda at the Senate watching this incredibly important galaxy changing vote. And it's only then that Yoda's like, well, it's done. That's out of our control. We're not the Senate. We don't vote. We don't decide whether there should be an army. They voted him emergency powers and he passed the Military Act, basically. So Yoda's like, since it is going to happen, since the soldiers exist and it looks like we're heading this way, then I'd rather be involved to keep some control over it. So there's this really interesting dance of, like, we don't vote, hands off. We're just watching this election moment, this Senate moment. And then once the Senate makes a decision, it makes, then we'll make our decision to be like, if you're going to do it anyway, let us be in charge of the clones. How do you feel it? Like, what do you think Mace and Yoda were sitting there hoping for when they're watching that Senate? Not vote really, but that, you know, moment where the emergency powers vote and therefore the military creation happens.
I mean, I guess the easiest answer is that it doesn't happen. But even then, you got an army that already exists, right? They know by this time, yeah. Right? They're already like, so even, yeah, it could be that letting, not necessarily as the force wields it, but just like letting this natural existence of light and dark happen. And then we've got to stand between it. So therefore, I think Yoda's, I don't even say justification, but decision, it's a strong decision to be like, hey, all right, well, I like what you're saying. If like I'm gonna go see what we got. Like we got this. I'd rather be involved. We'd already don't trust this, what's going on around us. You got Mace already by this point. They might be in that like where we're losing our connections to the Force or things are mm-hmm. a little blurry for us. So mm-hmm. let's hide that. And let's follow the Force on this one here. It happened for a reason, maybe. So yeah. Let's try to get involved. I'm okay with that decision at that point in time, even though Mace has gone from, we can't fight a war for you, I'm slicing Jango's head off. You know.
So if the story had been Jar Jar, suggests voting emergency powers to Palpatine, and the rest of the Senate is just like, boo, get out of here, Jar Jar. Boo. It doesn't work. He doesn't get the emergency powers. The clones exist. Mm-hmm. Do you think Yoda and Mace are happy? Do you think they think, okay, good, an escalation. We've evaded an escalation. And they still go to Kamino and go like, okay, you guys all want to be farmers? Like, yeah.
Do we still have to pay for this?
Because that is such an, it really is not just the Jedi, like lightsabers, let's go. Obviously it is knowing Dooku's involved. It is the kidnapping of, Obi and Anakin, the hiding of it, of the much larger droid foundry than they knew, that there's a much larger force, you know?
Right, right.
But it is also that army is active and it's going to act anyway. But there's a part of me that wants to think like, if the Senate had not given Palpatine emergency powers, had not approved the use of the clone army, mm-hmm. that it would have been a sigh of relief from Yoda and Mace, and they would have taken it as an opportunity to attempt to de-escalate.
Absolutely. You make them farmers is hilarious, but I don't think you can come back from that once it pushes past. And Palpatine just knowing that fear would be the motivator in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. It's hard to defeat that.
So I know this often comes up when we discuss this, that people have strong feelings. It's, a big part of what the conversation is, obviously, with any political discussion, but specifically about were the Jedi mistaken to get involved in the Clone Wars. And I think the Jedi did do heroic things during the Clone Wars. You know, it's real heroic to stop a hospital from being destroyed and from, mm-hmm. Weapons on and totally innocent, uninvolved population of cute raccoon people is I'd always vote for that. I think they did do a lot of heroic things during the Clone Wars, but I think they did back away. I think they let more decisions be made for them and gave away too much of their own power. And to Victor's point, too much of their power is a balance in a system of power in the galaxy. They gave away too much of their power to the mm-hmm. Senate out of fear, wanting to control public opinion of the Jedi, wanting to be in lockstep with the Senate, wanting to say, hey, you, the Senate, started this war. We can't control that. We're not going to come in lightsabers blazing and go, you voted the wrong way. That's not mm-hmm. what we believe in.
Mm-hmm. Can't do that.
You started it, so we will try to end it quickly. But they could have said, you started it, and we told you we're not soldiers. We're peacekeepers. So we're going to go around the galaxy trying to protect everyone we can from being harmed in this conflict.
Yeah, that's what I would have hoped, right?
Yeah.
Instead, that equally divided three-way pie starts, executive starts on the legislative side too.
Yeah, but it's hard because you they're my heroes. Hey, I got Kenobi's on my thigh staring at me right now. I do think they do lots of heroic things during the Clone Wars, but it does ultimately lead to their downfall and the galaxies for a while.
Yeah, and I think in each heroic act, and I'm not saying they're patting themselves on the back or it's a leaderboard they're tracking back at the temple, but it's like that's one more step forward where you're pretty convinced you're doing right, right? Because mm-hmm. you are. And so it makes it harder to pull back, too.
Yeah. Big thoughts, big ideas in Star Wars and the real world. Any final thoughts from you, Ken?
No, I love it. I love this is what's at play and what's at stake in the prequels, among many other big themes and ideas and scenes and fun pod races. This is why I love analyzing the prequels as best I can, my limited knowledge of even real world or space galaxy politics. But but I love it. I love it. This is what is there. Well, we love diving into those films.
Yeah, no, me too. And it's why I really believe in sort of justice for the Jedi from the perspective that it's not that they always make the right decisions. It's that they're trying to walk a very difficult path to say, we have this power, we should use it. Now, how do we use it responsibly to help the most people is not an easy question. And it's why I like the more complicated storytelling of the Jedi. And I think that the whole Clone Wars era is a great time for Jedi storytelling.
I agree with that. And final note on that too, of like in Star Wars, the Star Wars saga is so very clearly dark and light, good and bad, without a doubt. And we always say here, hey, there's no real gray Jedi. There is this kind of stuff. There's these very real world discussions, I think, that are very present in Star Wars. The line isn't always easy. You think in the end, you do either make a choice or the choice is made for you, and that's what's at play here too.
It's a great, elegant way to wrap it up. Some choices were made for the Jedi and they went along with them. And that is the Clone Wars. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back to talk about Disneyland. Also, another complicated emotional topic. Back in a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey And we are back here on Cues of Everything. We have talked about the Jedi's decision when it comes to Clone Wars, comparisons to European governmental structures, and all sorts of light topics. Now we're going to go on to the light topic of Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland. This comes to us from Stephen Campbell, who says, "Hello there, Force Center. I'm curious about your thoughts on Disney Parks' Galaxy's Edge, particularly its theming and fixed point in the overall Star Wars canon. When Disney first announced the themed land back in 2015, most fans, including myself, were filled with excitement of the possibilities the land could offer. We soon learned that the area would be set on a planet never before seen in Star Wars. Imagineer Scott Trowbridge, the one who oversaw the land's development, explained that this was done to allow people the opportunity to have their own unique Star Wars story and not feel tied down to a specific planet or event from the films. Though the land setting, Batuu's Black Spire Outpost, has, as of now, not physically appeared in any film or television series, the overall rides, attractions, and tie-in materials establish the land setting to be between The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker. Guests could interact with sequel trilogy characters such as Kylo Ren, Rey, Chewbacca, and Vi Moradi, while also enjoying some experiences that can fit any Star Wars era, such as Ogus Cantina, Mobu's Droid Builder, and Savi's Workshop Lightsaber Building. With the recent success of the characters introduced on Disney Plus, it appears that the park has worried less about the land's established timeline and focused on integrating the more popular recent characters such as Boba Fett, Din Djarin, Grogu, Fennec Shand, and Ahsoka. What are your thoughts on this? Did establishing a specific canon timeline for the park limit their creativity? Do you think Disney should break away from the timeline constraints? As a Star Wars fan that is more attuned to the land's overall story compared to the average park goer, am I overthinking these changes? Thanks, and keep up the great work." Thank you, Stephen, for the great question. It is about actual Galaxy's Edge, but it is also about the general ideas of kind of immersion and timelines and canon and how important are those things to our experiences. Ken, I want to just start out by, you know, acknowledging that I am extremely lucky to experience Galaxy's Edge, and you know, not everybody can. It's an incredibly expensive trip. If I still lived in Minnesota, I would not have been there three times. It's a huge reason that I was able to be there. Yeah, I've been there to Disneyland, never to Disney World, to Galaxy's Edge three different times. Once pretty early on, well before Rise of the Resistance was open, and then another two times. So I've been able to kind of see it evolve and change a bit. What is your Galaxy's Edge experience?
I just got to go once, very fortunate, there in March of 2020 on a Thursday. And the day they announced we're closing this park for some sort of virus going around on Saturday. Quite a time, quite a memory. It was a rainy day. I was just clearing out my iCloud photos and stumbled into all of those pictures yesterday. And I was reliving kind of the fun I had at Galaxy's Edge. It's only been the one time, is my experience.
And you did the Falcon ride, right?
Did the Falcon ride, did Rise of Resistance, Ogas right at about 10 in the morning, drinking early in the day. Normally not a problem, but there it seemed weird. Had a little Ronto wrap or something later today. Did it all till about 2:30. Did Rise of Resistance. The rain had literally been going for like 7 hours straight, which is kind of rare around these parts, or at least used to be rare around these parts. And then it was like 2:30. Grace and I were like, let's get back to the hotel room. But got to experience that there for that
day. Yeah. Yeah. No weather is rare right now, it appears, everywhere. Yeah. So where do you go with this? What are your thoughts on Galaxy's Edge sticking to a canon timeline? How does it enhance or detract from it for you?
This is a great question, Scott. I overall say I defend this decision if it needs defending. I don't know if you need to defend Disney on anything. They're making money. They're all right. But I remember when this was launched, or when it was about to be launched, there was like a little meme that was going around that was like, basically, you know, no Kathleen Kennedy, this is not what we want, this is what we want. And it was like a map of Hoth and Endor and Tatooine and, you know, all these kind of parts of what is Galaxy's Edge being divided equally amongst different parts of the saga. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to say, I understand where that came from, but it was used in that way. It was part of that conversation of, you idiots, that's we don't want this new stuff, we want that. It doesn't mean I wouldn't have enjoyed that, but I've always stood by the decision to make it a certain place in the canon timeline, at least at launch, you and I and many others love that Delilah S. Dawson book that caught us all by surprise, the Black Spire one. Vi Moradi is a great character. I always want Vi to be there. I want to make that clear and on the record. However, as time moves on, I understand we talk often about outside the Star Wars bubble or the general audience. It isn't about Kylo or Rey or Chewbacca. Those characters are very popular, despite what some might have you believe. But a character like Vi is a book character, right? A great character. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I do not want that character ever removed. I tried so hard to find Vi that day. She wasn't present. But I understand the decision where they're at now. I'm glad it's not a generic land. I'm glad it's Batuu, and Batuu can show up on different parts of the Star Wars timeline. But why wouldn't you have Din and Grogu there? Why wouldn't you right now? You have to go to that. It's just a smarter business decision at this point. So I like this line that they maybe can ride on. Because at any point, it's one of the oldest outposts in the galaxy. So, you know, High Republic becomes super, super popular. You know, Buryaga could be there. Going forward, you know, a new character to Rey, in the Rey movie. You could have Luke and Han there. You could bring in Leia. It all could work in the setting, but I understand expanding it past a certain day. It was a specific day that they were having on that planet.
I mean, I hope Acolyte is huge. And what is it, Kelnaka, the depressed Wookiee who wants to be left alone? I want to not take a photo with him. I want to take a photo of him by himself. Well, you can't have a scan.
Is it like going to those restaurants where the waiters intentionally, treat you bad? Rude. They're rude on purpose. It's part of the ticket. Kelnaka is just like, I know pictures.
Your friend can take a photo of you trying to get a photo with Kelnaka as he roars. I mean, I think there's a fascinating thing here with Batuu and Black Spire in that there's a choice of place and there's the choice of time. Love the choice of place. You know, as much as, you know, I original trilogy kid, I'm like, yeah, can I walk through Echo Base on Hoth? Could I go into specifically Chalmers? Yeah, I would not have complained for a second. That would have been great. But to me, in my opinion, this is a far better choice because what they said is it isn't just me walking through the experience of specifically Han or Luke or Leia if they did embrace the prequels of if it was the Outlander Club, that would be amazing, too. And
that'd be great.
But it would be specifically like recreating the movie, whereas this is a celebration of the palette. The rich palette of Star Wars that it is that Star Wars aesthetic is so specific yet diverse that they can create a place that's never been seen on screen that feels like Star Wars because of the Ourobesh, because of the design and the architecture of the buildings, because a life-size A-wing is parked there, because of the thematic resonance in Star Wars between the organic and the mechanical, to see the actual difference in the First Order section of town being sort of cold and mechanical, and the resistance part of that being designed to be flowing and organic. All of these things are taking the palette, the ideas of Star Wars, and then successfully translating them into a location that we haven't been to as an audience, except for in books and comics, so we can have our own experience. And the idea of making it a trading post also is like anyone can be there anytime doing anything. It taps into that going back to Tatooine. You know, I know people don't like it that a lot happens on Tatooine, but the original sort of Tatooine idea of like it's a real back end. Part of the galaxy that it taps into that vibe of like this is a remote place where people meet. So there's the place of it, which I think is fantastic, a great choice, incredibly well designed. Then there's the specificity of the time, and like right now it's very much Last Jedi: Rise of Skywalker, but in publishing it was established immediately to be a timeless place. We got. Right out of the gate, we got the Thrawn novel of Anakin and Padme being there in the Clone Wars era. We got, you know, that comic book series, right, where things happened, all different timelines. So from the beginning, they were like, this is a timeless place, so we could reskin it. which I also think was a really smart decision.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having been there, those rides seem real hard to reskin. Like the Falcon 1, okay, maybe.
Yeah.
Rise of the Resistance, I'm not spoiling anything for that ride, because if you've never been on it, don't watch any YouTube videos, don't listen to anybody, just experience it. So I'm not saying a damn thing about it, other than, yeah, it could be reskinned, but I think it would kind of show a little bit of like, we're not moving this giant prop, but we're kind of putting a mask on it so we can imagine it's a different time. I don't know. What do you think about the rides, reskinning the rides for a different time?
The Falcon 1, you could. All of them would take a bit of a shutdown period of time, I'm sure. But yeah, the Falcon 1, you absolutely could. The Rise, I mean, that's almost a complete rebuild of the ride. I'm no Imagineer, but like, yeah, that would be a tough one. It's very specific. And did they lock themselves in? I don't know. But the ride's also so spectacular. You're right. I'm not even going to say anything. But for those who haven't experienced it, it's such a unique ride that, yeah, I think it's okay. But
yeah.
Do they add a ride? Do they have, I think wasn't there rumors of a third ride that was supposed to be there? Wasn't, I don't know. They'll buy up another part of Anaheim and expand it if they want.
Yeah. They'll build on a cloud somehow. No. Yeah.
They're running out of, it's a little bit, they're pushing to Harbor and Cantel. They're almost to the brink there.
As long as they don't take that restaurant Puesto that I like very much, everything will be
Puesto
fine.
Or the McDonald's right across the freeway.
I think there is space for more contained ride or a different. Mm-hmm. I think they could really use a bar that is a little bit more accessible than to Oga's, because it's a little bit work to get into Oga's, all that. Anyway,
it is.
To what you were talking about and to what Steven's asked, one is question of like the level of immersion, because that's I think that's what's at heart is, OK, the rides are you got to kind of imagine you're there in a specific window. They're pretty locked in, particularly the Rise of the Resistance. Then there's elements of the Falcon ride that's pretty locked into the time that you're in, that easier to change and all that. But there, to me, it's this fascinating ongoing thing, not just for a place like Disneyland, but I think we're seeing it in almost all entertainment with MCU and with Star Wars in particular, where you've got this large base of fans. And if they're kind of in the bubble, there's a little bit of like, give us all the immersion we can get. Mm-hmm. And then there are people who are just outside the bubble or way outside the bubble. And you kind of want to include them too. And what I've seen from my three visits spread over time of this started off is we want to go full immersion. You can have your app and we can track how well you did on the Smugglers Run flight. And the bartender will know if you were a bad gunner and they'll poke fun at you. Like they were advertising a bonkers level of immersion. And when I first got there, I asked to take a photo with Vi Moratti, who is right there and easy to find. And it was the old, do you mean a scan? You can take a scan with me. Let's use the made up words, And I had to go a different route to use the bathroom because I wear my Rebel Insignia t-shirt and I knew the stormtrooper would stop me because it was so like, hey, if you've got a Rebel shirt, they're going to give you, harass you, right? There was like this deep level immersion. The food menu was just like, it's Shaq. And that changed very quickly. When I was there, it was just like, I ordered a Shaq roast and like, some, dad from, North Dakota who'd seen Star Wars once was like, the bleep's a Shaq. So now all the food is like, it's beef, it's chicken. Like the immersion of the menu decreased. I think the blue milk and the green milk has been clarified of like it's a frozen fruit drink, is much more like it swapped from the Star Wars food drink description is huge. And maybe down here it's chicken is now it's chicken. You can call the tip if you want, you bleeping nerd. those levels of immersion went back to balance, I think, between the reality of immersion and being open to more people.
Yeah, look, it's I think the decision to make it that immersive, especially at the beginning, I think is an artistic choice that will stand the test of time. It's like an artist who says, don't worry, you're going to catch up to this song. It's George saying, don't worry, a generation will catch up to the movies. I really stand by it. But the reality is, it's we've even dealt with it here in Four Center. It's like, we know what we do. We know what we do well. But we also want someone passing through to be like, what are they talking about? Like, it's just the balance. And I think Disney is a business, clearly trying to make money. And what you're describing about with what the bleep is Shaq is important. And I'm sure they learned it. And that's why I understand the spirit of, no, you should have given us Endor and Hoth. I think that would have been the choice that everyone would have expected. Right. Mm-hmm. When Star Wars Land was first in, that would have been the choice. And you don't want to always do that. When we're writing jokes, you know, our buddy Mark Ellis always says, you know, when I come to my punchline, I go to the third option, the one that I think of, because that's going to be the surprise. That's going to be the thing that's actually an artistic choice. And I think Galaxy's Edge is an artistic choice. Mm-hmm. But the realities of it. You know, again, I go to the Viva Marati thing. She's a great character. I never want the character to leave. I want the character to be in TV shows. I want the character to be in more movies, more books. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, who? And that's just, you can't fix that other than a new character coming in, an additional character coming in.
And I think for me, I like a balance. Like the mm-hmm. Rise of the Resistance waiting line is great, 10 times more powerful to me because I read Black Spire, and I know what the Resistance went through to build that base. I went through there with my wife's parents, and I kept checking in with something. Do you really want this much Star Wars information? They're like, yes, we do. So I was like, well, they went through hell to build this, and blah blah blah. You know, mm-hmm. So I like the immersion, and but I also want it to be accessible, and I don't want it to be where the immersion becomes almost like a headache, like literally, like. Kind of joke about it, but it really was like, it's kind of fun to be stopped by stormtroopers, but I actually don't want to be so immersed in horrific fascism that I can't go to the bathroom because I'm wearing the wrong t-shirt. It was like
too real, too real,
too immersive for me. Thank you very much. You know, and there's always this kind of comedy to me of like, I'm fine. I can immerse myself in my own headspace and go. Mm-hmm. I'm a Resistance sympathizer, and I'm, you know, doing this. But then I look over and like, oh, that dad has jorts and fanny pack and trucker cap, and I don't want to force everybody to dress up in like Star Wars fatigues before they there's the last time I went through too. There was just like Kylo Ren and the stormtroopers are out, and there was a child just. Mercilessly mocking Kylo Ren, and Kylo Ren was like, watch it, child, you know, and like everybody's were standing around to watch just like a 4-year-old just mm-hmm. swear mm-hmm. at Kylo Ren, and like I don't think the real Kylo Ren would allow that, but what level of immersion do you want, you know?
They actually start arresting people, put them in Disney jail.
Yep. So for me, like, I take Fennec, Boba Fett, Mando, Grogu, Ahsoka. Yeah. Like, I just take it as, like, you know, I hope they live that long. And maybe they really are at Batuu, you know.
Yeah.
You know, great health. Yeah. They're in great health. They're aging well.
There you go. Yeah. They should have, as you walk into Galaxy's Edge on either entrance, and I know there's the Disney World one probably set up slightly different, I think. But they should have, like... Kind of like when I used to work in a convalescent home and they had a big calendar that said today is this portion of the canon timeline.
Mm-hmm. Here's my pitch to you, Ken, for immersion. This is what I think they should do. I meant this as a joke, but now I'm kind of into it.
Okay.
I think the rides are really hard to reskin. So I like keeping it as like, hey, if you want to go into the immersion, that's what day it is. That's what timeline we're in is between Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker. Mm-hmm. But they could do a thing where the inhabitants of Black Spire Outpost are having a Clone Wars reenactment weekend. That's what's happening in their timeline.
Yes, yes.
So you go in there and there's, you know, a guy dressed as, you know, Clone Wars era Kenobi. And we're not meant to think Kenobi is there in the timeline. Mm-hmm. A modern resident of Black Spire Outpost has been hired to dress up as Kenobi for the weekend, and we can take photos with him.
Love that. Love that. We're reenacting certain battles today. Yeah, this is great. Mm-hmm. I'm all as a kid who had a Civil War reenactor as an eighth grade history teacher, I'm all for it. Let's do it. Yep. Bring that musket to school.
Yeah. Final thought for me is that, you know, having been there, you know, very lucky to be there three times, I've got to talk to people and see people from every, literally the first time I was there, we got sat at a table with a bunch of other people from Oga's Cantina. And I was like, did they sit us at like a customer survey table? Cause it was a couple of all in Star Wars people like us. Mm. There was an all in, I'll see anything Disney who was just there for the different pins and to spot the hidden Mickeys.
Leia's the Disney princess.
And there was one guy, one woman was like, I'm so happy my husband's here. And we're like, cool. Why? He's like, he said he would never come to Disneyland with me again unless he could drink. And he's only here because he can drink now.
Yeah,
you see all sorts of people. You see people who are like, I've never watched a Star Wars, but this is magical. You know,
yes.
And I want it to be magical for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. I want to be magical for everyone. I do think there's so much magic there. I've described seeing that Falcon for the first time and even knowing it was coming. It hit me so hard. And I think a lot of people have had the reaction, but I agree with you. You got to make sure everyone can experience that to some way.
Yep. So that is our complicated episode of Jedi Council Decisions and Disneyland Council Decisions. We're very understanding of both. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, we're on Twitter, Threads, and Instagram at Force Center Pod. We're on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. We're available as a podcast in a lot of spots like Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. As we said up top, you can support us at patreon.com/Force Center. Always enjoy having new names pop up there. You can follow me at Ken Knapsack. Go to my website, kennapsack.com. There you get ticket information for upcoming shows. I am preparing, I'm packing, and heading to rainy and snowy Boston for two shows with Mark Ellis. Information on the website. Sir, you're going to be a little wet out here, but definitely slightly warmer. Where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw, Blue Sky, Threads, Mastodon, Instagram, all those places. You can check out my weekly blog about the creative process and hopefully encouraging other people to set little goals for themselves and keep making things. That blog is called Finish Your Monsters. You can just Google Finish Your Monsters in my name and it should pop right up. More film festival appearances coming for our short horror film, The Nightmare Adorable. I've got my website, josephscrimshaw.com, all updated with those. Some showings coming up in Georgia and Virginia. So if you're in those areas, go check it out. And more to be announced soon. That is it for me. We have aid the cues.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.